You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Shares of Alphabet just soaring in the after hours right now, Carol. Higher after the company reported earnings. Up as we speak, another 13.6% in the after hours right now. This after declaring a dividend, boosting a buyback, authorizing a repurchase of up to an additional $70 billion in shares. First quarter ad revenue coming out above expectations. First quarter also declaring a cash dividend of 20 cents per share.
All right, so let's get to it. James Chalkmok, so much to talk about. He's partner and technology analyst at Clockwise Capital. He joins us from Miami. First of all, Alphabet feels like I can't find anything wrong here. Walk us through, is this just kind of firing on all cylinders, and if you will, and then just throwing on a dividend and then throwing on an additional buyback?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me. You know, for Alphabet, this was a tough one, you know, because we had the Meta earnings last night, you know, uncertainty as it relates to the sustainability of the top line growth metrics. And obviously, Alphabet via Google had, you know, uncertainties around their search business. And at the same time, you have this growth in CapEx spend, you know, is that going to translate over? So, you know, we were kind of debating what to do. And going into the quarter, we actually rotated a portion of our Microsoft position to triple up our Alphabet position. But thankfully that worked out. But
it's
I think the key for Google, they're both up. So, yeah, I mean, it worked out. But
so why did you do it? What was it that you saw, James, in the Alphabet story that you said you wanted to do that?
Well, the main thing was the relative valuations. I mean, okay. The expectations for Microsoft were exceedingly high, and the expectations for Alphabet were exceedingly low. And you look at one's trading at 22 times earnings and the other one's at 35 times earnings. So you know what kind of the risk reward is. And especially we had some sense of how things might trade if they came in on a bear kind of narrative, given how Meta traded. So it really just boils down to that. But the fact that Microsoft was able to exceed those nosebleed expectations is a testament to the trends and the force of trends that we're seeing in the shift to the cloud and AI more broadly.
Hey, I just want to get your thoughts on Snap, because it's a company you've been covering for years.
We love to ask about that every time.
The good and the bad. Well, and the reason I'm asking is because shares are up, surging as we speak by more than 20%. 25% at this point.
Yeah.
This is after the company reported.
They are down 32% year to date.
They are. That's important context. the company is seeing second quarter revenue from $1.23 billion to $1.26 billion versus estimates of $1.21 billion. As Carol mentioned, it's been a brutal year so far for Snap. How are you reading into these results? And you don't own Snap anymore, do you?
No, not for a long time. You know, with Snap, you know, they were supposed to be the camera company and transformed into, exactly what they were initially, you know, just messaging and some content initiatives. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's really, really hard for these niche platforms to scale in the manner in which is necessary to provide the differentiation to advertisers and the return objectives and return enhancements on that ad spend. So I think that the disparity between these niche platforms like a Snap versus the likes of Alphabet and Meta will only increase from here. The caveat being that you have companies like Pinterest, which we used to own but sold, just given the fact that they hit our target, have more opportunities because of the engagement that they bring that is likely to grow over time versus, stick to a more static rates, which is from the likes of Snap.
All right, we've got to go back to Google. Forgive me, Alphabet. I keep calling it Google, but
that's
Alphabet.
The kids used to call it.
I know. Up 12.5% here, folks, in the aftermarket. This stock heading into it had about a 12% gain on the year here in 2024. The stock was up almost 60% last year. But, when you look at Alphabet, James, and you look at its business lines and its roles and its play, whether it's AI, whether it's still advertising in a big way, our own Mandeep Singh saying, this company is all about engagement. That's kind of so valuable. And that's going to be valuable, certainly, in terms of machine learning and Gen AI. This is really important stuff. I mean, how do you think about, Alphabet in kind of its future growth trajectory and kind of where it goes from here? I mean, this is a pretty impressive report, but it's also appeasing investors of saying we're going to throw some cash back to you.
Absolutely. I mean, anything with respect to returning capital to shareholders or getting religion on the cost side of their business and utilizing their cash flow for more constructive purposes rather than throwing it into black holes, which is the way that they have been operating for as long as I can remember. That being said, I think that the future for Alphabet and Google, still remains a question mark. We don't know, and I don't think anyone can definitively say what that search environment experience is going to look like in the future. If you look out 5 years down the road. Now, the good news is all of this stuff seems to be like coming at you fast, right? All the AI, since January of 2023, it's been coming hard and fast. But the good news is on the behavioral aspect and the consumer experience, things have changed with ChatGPT and whatnot, but things aren't changing that fast overnight, which affords Alphabet time to really figure things out, whether it's cannibalistic to their existing search business or not. I think we have time. So I think extrapolating too much too soon is a risk. So as long as they have the time, they might figure it out. They may not. But they might. But James, look into 2024 and 2025. And that's it.
Could critics argue about Alphabet that declaring a dividend and boosting a share buyback potentially isn't the best use of money right now? Perhaps they should be investing more in AI. Perhaps they should be investing more in making sure this search product is bulletproof.
Yeah, I mean, they're throwing off tremendous amounts of cash as it is, and they're investing a lot. And you look at the margin disparity versus a Meta, they have a lot of cushion there. And they're investing, strongly as well. So I don't think it's mutually exclusive. So long as the ball continues to move forward, which is what we need to see, and we'll see what the color commentary is on the call, I think it'll be okay. I think the longer term is where the questions linger. Shorter term, it'll be fine.
All right, so let's go to Microsoft, because it's also the other big one, one of the big ones after the close. It's up about 5% here in the aftermarket. This one, sales and profit beat expectations on robust AI demand. That's the headline on our story. So quarterly sales and profit climbing more than projected, lifted by corporate demand for Microsoft's cloud and AI offerings. Revenue, as we said, up 17% in the third quarter, $61.9 billion profit, $2.94 a share. Analysts on average estimated per share earnings of $2.83 on sales of $60.9 billion. So again, outperformance here. And we know that Satya Nadella has been really infusing all of Microsoft's entire product line with AI technology, thanks to its partner, OpenAI. So thoughts on Microsoft, what we got here in the quarter, what it tells you about their business today and going forward?
Yeah, what's most amazing to me is the fact that they're able to maintain the growth rates, no matter how big their revenue base gets. And the fact that they're able to deliver the numbers that you just cited and do so in an efficient way where earnings are continuing to grow at the same rate. So it's not a there's no contra indicators on, and you know, sales versus spending. So I think that, to me, the sustainability is the biggest and most impressive component of their operations. And most importantly, you know, broadly, I think you can extrapolate that the themes on the data center spend and the semiconductors, like the NVIDIAs of the world, and the direction of corporate enterprise and their appetite for shifting from analog to digital is as strong as ever. So I think it's a very, very good omen for a lot of these companies, and being at the center of it. You can make any analogy that you want. We're in the first inning, third inning, whatever. But right. I think the main thing is that the world is going to, I think Sam Altman had this quote that he said, the technological changes that we've seen over the last 500 years, the changes over the next 50 years will be greater than the technological changes over the last 500.
Right.
You know, so that's the pace of change that we're talking. And a lot of that's going to come in the first decade. And these companies are all at the epicenter of it.
Just want to point out, Azure, Microsoft's cloud computing unit, revenue gaining 31% in the quarter above an average prediction of 29%. So picking up slightly from the 30% growth in the previous period. So, you know, that's a trend line. If you're following it, right, you want to see.
I mean, there's a chance we see both of these, depending on what happens, there's a chance we see both Alphabet and Microsoft hit new records tomorrow in today's trade, depending on what happens. Okay, I want to talk, James, just a little bit about Microsoft's legacy here and the way that it's been able to shift and embrace AI. Where's the most important part of looking at Microsoft's growth moving forward? I mean, I know we obviously know Azure is incredibly important, but the company has made a huge bet on AI with OpenAI. Where do you start to see that investment and its relationship with OpenAI manifest in earnings?
I think it's going to be, you know, exactly, you'll see it in the Azure business, but more broadly in the intelligent cloud segment. I mean, it should continue to translate on that front. But it's not just that segment. It's going to feed into other parts of their business too. You know, on the subscription side of their software services and potentially even gaming. And you know, so there's a lot of levers, I think, that will be pulled from that relationship. And as the world and corporate enterprise continues to move in that direction, more data is going to feed into it, which is going to fuel even more efficiency with respect to the capabilities that they do. And, you know, Copilot, you know, for instance, is just on the, I don't want to keep saying first inning, day two of its potential. So, and there's a lot of money to be made there that you'll see that I don't think is being appreciated at all, virtually at all right now.
These are all different companies, but they're all working on AI. And to a certain extent, they're competing with each other when it comes to that technology, no question. Given what we're seeing from shareholders in reaction to Microsoft and Alphabet today, and given what we saw today in the session from reaction from investors to Meta Platforms sending shares for their worst day in months, what did the two companies that reported today get right? Or maybe a better way to ask is, what did Meta Platforms get wrong?
I think what they got wrong was largely related to the management of the expectations. You know, there was no indication around the pace of investment that's necessary to sustain the kind of growth. I mean, they talk very qualitatively about this is a big opportunity ahead, you know, all the metaverse and yada, yada. You know, there was no pushback whatsoever on the questions and commentary with respect to, you know, how we should expect the pace of investment to ramp to justify and capitalize on the trends that Zuckerberg talks about. So I think it was more of an expectation versus reality mismatch that probably could have been better managed.
All right, let's just remind everybody the big earnings after the close and those that have really outperformed here and showing some stunning moves to the upside. Microsoft among them. That stock, as we mentioned, it is moving up just about 4.4% here in the aftermarket. And the company coming out, sales and profit beating expectations, lifted by corporate demand for the software makers' cloud and AI offerings. We talked about Azure gaining revenue alone. loan gating 31% in the quarter. That was above analyst expectations. Revenue in the third quarter overall up 17% to $61.9 billion. Profit was $2.94 a share. Analysts on average estimated per share earnings of $2.83, so below what they actually came in with. And the estimate for sales was $60.9. So again, really hitting it out of the park when it comes to those estimates. And that is certainly one reason why you're seeing the stock, or a big reason why you're seeing the stocks up. The stock of Microsoft, I should say, up at the aftermarket.
Okay, let's repeat a little bit of what we saw from Alphabet. The company's first quarter Google ad revenue coming in at $61.66 billion versus estimates of $60.18 billion. And the company authorizing a repurchase of up to an additional $70 billion worth of shares, also declaring a cash dividend of 20 cents per share. First quarter revenue, excluding traffic acquisition costs, $67.59 billion, beating estimates of $66.07 billion.
To the downside, Intel shares are down more than 8% here. Biggest maker of PC processors, lackluster forecast from the company for the current quarter, indicating it's really still struggling to kind of find its way back to the top, if you will. Sales in the second quarter will be about $13 billion. That compares with an average analyst estimate of $13.6 billion, according to our data here at Bloomberg. Profit, again, the outlook will be 10 cents a share minus certain items versus a projection of 24 cents. So that's a pretty big miss. We're talking with James Chalkmok, partner and tech analyst over at Clockwise Capital. James, is there some underlying theme? We're not through all the Mag 7 companies. We've got what? Amazon next week.
And, yeah, we got NVIDIA in a while.
Right? So yeah. We've got some other players to get through.
Next month, but NVIDIA.
Is there any themes that you're finding, certainly for the investment community, when it comes to especially these big tech names, the Mag 7 often, who haven't always been so magnificent as of late, what they're saying and kind of their impact on the overall market? Is there some big takeaway here for you?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the sellers of these data center services are the best place to be. You know, from NVIDIA to Dell, and those are the server side. Like, we own VRT, which helps with the cooling systems, comfort systems. You know, so there's a lot of these companies that play into building out the companies that are selling to the hyperscalers. I think we'll continue to be in a great position. Now, as far as the Mag 7 is concerned, I do think, you know, the market is still in a state of choppiness and volatility. And I think that's going to last until we have better clarity on what the Fed is going to do. And you saw the GDP numbers today. So there's mixed messages as to which direction macro is going versus tech and which one to prioritize. Because if you prioritize the economic cycle, and that means valuations are at risk. If you prioritize the tech cycle, that means that earnings are the focus. And right now we're in this world where some days valuations are in focus and other days earnings, like today. Hey, so I think you just got to stay nimble at the end of the day.
Hey, James, last question, 30 seconds here. I'm looking at Time U.S. Equity on the Bloomberg Terminal. This is the Clockwise Core Equity and Innovation ETF. It is up this year a whopping 18.3%, outperforming all the benchmarks. Amazon is your second biggest holding after T-bills, accounting for 5% of the portfolio. We got Amazon coming up. 30-second preview of Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon, it's the only of the Mag 7 that we feel that we haven't cut exposure to. You know, it's a 5% or give or take weight, and we're maintaining that. I think the data that you saw from Microsoft and today in the release of the cloud is a very good omen. They're firing across all three of their businesses, you know, on the grocery side, the retail side, the cloud side. And this is the first time in a while that you've seen everything going in the right direction, and most especially on the margin. So, you know, we like the risk reward here. You know, I think next year you could get to 225. This year, probably upwards of 200. So, you know, it's one that definitely keep in the portfolio for sure.
All right. We're going to leave it on that note. Hey, James, thank you so much. James Chalkmok, partner and tech analyst at Clockwise Capital, joining us on Zoom from Miami. A lot of names moving here in the aftermarket.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through.
Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Listen on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
All right, we're going to call this an unwelcome combination. U.S. economic growth sliding to an almost two-year low last quarter while inflation jumped to uncomfortable levels. John just talking about all of this, interrupting a run of strong demand and muted price pressures that had fueled optimism for that soft landing. Sigh, that soft landing, Tim. It feels like maybe not going to happen, at least not for today.
At least not today. With more on today's data and the reaction in the U.S. Treasury market, back with us is Bloomberg News International Economics and Policy Correspondent Michael McKee. Also, Bloomberg News rates reporter Michael McKenzie, both here in the studio. Michael McKee, I want to start with the data on growth and inflation. Just break it down for us and what exactly has folks so concerned.
Well, the number came in worse than forecast, and certainly down from the fourth quarter's 3.4. We had 1.6% growth in the first quarter, but it really wasn't as slow as it appears because at least as far as people like the Fed would be concerned, because a lot of it was trade. We imported a lot more than we exported, partly because of the strong dollar, and it's cheaper to bring in imports. And if imports are coming in, it does suggest that retailers and others are anticipating they
building up
can sell this stuff.
Yeah.
Consumer spending, 2.5%, not as bad as it could have been, down from last quarter, but still reasonably good. Business investment, still strong, 2.9%. Inventory is another problem. Inventories weren't as high, but inventories and trade are very volatile. So overall, it's not that bad a report. When you take out inventories and trade, you get a 3.1% growth rate. So not too bad. What worried everybody, and this is Mike's people over there, is the PCE inflation numbers. Now, the government calculates this number quarterly with average of the 3 months, and it also does a month by month. And what ended up happening is a big jump of 0.3% in the year-over-year numbers for both headline and core. Core particularly concerning people. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the markets focused on and started falling out of bed because of. Now, we've gotten the monthly figures for January and February. We get the monthly figure for March tomorrow,
right?
And the question is, was this a problem all across the quarter? Was this a problem in January and February, and they had to revise those numbers? Or are we going to have a big negative surprise tomorrow?
So if March comes down, we wouldn't be so worried.
We wouldn't be so worried. If March comes in as forecast or goes a little bit lower, then you'll watch the markets melt up tomorrow, probably. Hmm.
Well, I don't know if I want to say a melt up, but we definitely have seen a move up once again in terms of the Treasury curve and yields. So, Michael McKenzie, come on in on this. Talk to us about the rate moves that we saw today and the significance.
Well, it's a classic. You get a hot piece of data, another hot piece of inflation data in particular, which has been the story for all this year. And as Mike's just said, if you see some relief tomorrow from the March number, you might get some stability here in Treasuries. It's been interesting this morning. We did get above 5% of the twos, but the buyers came back. We're right around that 5% level still. 10s got above 470, came back a bit as well. The seven-year auction, nice concession, so they took down the $44 billion of seven-year notes just now. So in general, you know, the markets, the Treasury sold over $180 billion of coupon debt this week, twos, fives, and sevens. There's a lot of supply. The problem is, of course, if the inflation numbers remain sticky tomorrow and it indicates that there is no relief near term, you've got a refunding coming next week. Mm-hmm. And that announcement's going to keep putting supply on the table, particularly because the refunding is quarterly. They set out what they're going to sell for the next 3 months, and I suspect the 3-year will be fine. It's the 10-year and the 30-year, the longer dated stuff, and that was selling off a lot today as well. So you could see a further test coming here of 475 and higher in 10s, for example, because we're pricing out the rate cuts for this year now. We're down to just one. I was talking to an investor this morning who always said it was going to be one this year, and they're feeling pretty good about this now. Yeah. And they're advising you should start scaling into bonds at these levels. But as she also said to me, don't go all in at these levels at the moment. There's still plenty of time to see just how the data turns and how the Fed's going to react, particularly next week when Powell gives his press conference. Is he actually now going to say potentially there could be some changes here? And that's where the market will be really focused on from here.
Oh, so Michael McKee, jump in on that and what we do hear from Fed Chair Jay Powell with that May meeting next week.
Well, everybody's going to be looking for him to put some time frame on it. He's already said we're not going to cut rates as soon as people thought, and we're waiting for more progress on inflation. I was laughing when Michael was talking there, because this morning I was looking at the Fed funds futures and the swaps rate for when markets think we're going to get rate cuts, and they priced everything out until December. And just a moment ago, they priced November back in by a basis point. Now it's going back and forth. This is what I predicted it this morning.
Focus.
It goes back
focus
and forth
a little bit.
And the funny thing is okay, people want to make a bet one way or another. That's fine, but the Fed doesn't know what it's going to do, and because they're data dependent and they're watching this data and it's not coming in as they thought, so they have to rethink what they want to do and when they want to do it, and they're just going to wait meeting by meeting to get a handle on it. So whatever the Fed funds futures or swaps say at this point isn't necessarily what's going to happen.
But Michael, are the rate moves and the traders, are they data dependent? I'm thinking about what Lizanne Saunders of Schwab said to us yesterday, and she's like, stop focusing on the debate about what's the Fed going to do, when is it going to cut rates, how many rates, like, just that's not what investors care about. Like, and she was tying what's going on in equity markets is based on what's going on in the rates markets. The rates market, are they taking their cues? I mean, they do take their cues from Jay Powell. They also, though, do from data points, right?
Like, yes, they do.
Help us understand.
But they do. But you got to remember, there's different types of investors. I mean, the people who are trading RIS swaps, trading between whether there's going to be a November cut, December cut, or maybe saying, actually, November's too close to the election, so maybe it's going to be a September cut, and they'll jump back in there if they get any kind of relief from the data side. They're the short-term momentum players. Longer-term investors who have been telling us for weeks, God, it's so nice to see yields finally getting into that 4.5%, 5% zip code. We didn't have that since 2007. And so their advice is, look, you've got to start strategically allocating more and more money and scale into the bond market as it sells off. The other point to make about all this, of course, is that the market priced in a lot of rate cuts at the start of this year, in part because Powell made the famous pivot in December. Now, as the market takes that out, you're tightening financial conditions. If you keep pushing yields higher, you're going to keep tightening financial conditions. And therefore, things will start to slow down again. And then the market will go back. It's kind of like a washing machine cycle.
But that's kind of what we saw in like August, September, October, yes, when we saw yields move higher.
Yes. So at the moment, the Treasury Index is on course to have its worst month since last February. And in fact, it's not that far away from actually being the worst month since the dark months of 2022, when things were really getting rocky. So that shock is coming through. Equities will probably take more of a hit too if yields keep on going up. Because ultimately, can this economy live with real yields going towards 250? I mean, that is debatable. But I think at the end of the day, as rates keep going, that's going to actually help slow things down. So ultimately, you will get some kind of cuts from the Fed, I would think. if this is the direction of travel.
What about the argument that, well, wait a minute, people, some investors are actually feeling, you know, wealthier, that they've put money in, you know, whether it's money markets or so on and so forth, and they're getting some decent returns. Or you look at some of these mega cap tech companies who've got so much cash on their balance sheet, and they're actually making money. We talked with our Bloomberg Intelligence team, and they said they're actually making some real money on all of this. How does that impact things?
Well, there's a theory.
In terms of the economic impact and a slowdown.
There's a theory that the Fed's high rates are actually goosing the economy,
yeah.
But nobody really at the Fed would believe that.
All right, that's a
the wealth
down
effect
for me.
Is not big enough. And the fact is that people who have enough money to be really making money in the markets aren't going to just start spending more because the markets are going up. They'll just keep spending as they do. So I don't think there's a lot to that.
What do you say to Michael saying, really, yields at 250? Can the economy live with that?
It looks like it. I mean, that's the thing that the Fed is saying at this point is we don't have to because, you know, we have real yields at that level and we have very low unemployment and we have reasonably strong growth. Inflation's a bit of a problem, but we'll see how that goes over the next couple of months. So we don't need to react at this point. And when you go back in history and you look at what happened after previous recessions when the Fed started raising rates, before we got into the great financial crisis and went to zero, this is not an unusual rate level. It, you know, 5.5 is maybe a little bit higher than you would have seen, but you're looking at 4 to 5% as a kind of a normal rate. Now, it's been 20-some years since we've been there, so people aren't used to that, but right. The economy functioned with that.
Is that the feeling that you're getting right now talking to bond investors, that this level of rates is the new normal?
Yeah, they think it's a return to what we had before the financial crisis. I mean, the financial crisis was the biggest economic shock since the Depression. You had the biggest collapse of financial markets and of the banks since the Depression era. I mean, it came, 10 years after they dismantled Glass-Steagall? So, you know, again, it takes a long time to recover from those kind of huge balance sheet shocks, particularly when it's overlaid with a massive housing bubble bursting. So you had both households and banks taking a massive hit. It, you know, took a decade to get through. And then you get COVID, which is suddenly just is a massive infusion of cash into the broad economy. And so we now have, you know, inflation picking up, the Fed unable to be... yet to be confident enough that it can start to ease back on those brakes and start cutting rates again because they don't have the confidence that inflation is truly under control. And it is a tricky period for the Fed because whenever you do see a pickup in inflation, yes, it will come down, but if it remains elevated, that means the economy is vulnerable to another inflationary shock, which just kicks it back up into gear. But I think in general, bond investors like what they're seeing. They do think, yes, there's potential for rates to go a bit higher from here, but in general they think we're pretty much near the top, but it's very difficult to pick a top. So this is why a lot of the longer term investors are just scaling into the market. And in particular though, they are not comfortable about debt beyond 10 years. And that gets back to the spending that's going on in Washington. It gets back to the fact that whilst the tax receipts have come in strong this year, that'll kind of push supply, you know, eases the pressure on supply concerns. Next year and beyond, particularly given however the election shakes out, you're going to have another round of supply, another more pressure coming through. And the one thing I will say, if I look at the 10-year and the 30-year, they really haven't truly come back to where we were before the financial crisis. Because if you look at the very geeky bond model that says, what is the risk premium? It's only still around zero for 10 years. That to me is a problem because you need to have a positive risk premium. Partly that'll come about if the curve steepens. But if you talk to investors, this is why they're a bit reticent about 10-year and longer debt.
I do wonder, we've had a lot of guests, I feel like, who've come on and just reminded us about the importance of U.S. government debt and managing it and servicing it and the additional issuance that will be needed. Mike, I mean, go back, right? How many years that we've talked about this so much in the past and then it kind of went away, but concerns about the cost of the ballooning government debt and servicing that. How do you think about that in terms of the economic impact?
Well, the way the Fed looks at it is if it has an impact on the economy, they might have to react, but they really can't do a whole lot because the government, the fiscal side is not their area. We have been talking about the problems of high debt forever, and we've never hit the spot where it really affects the economy. Now, economic theory tells you that it will, but we don't know where that is, and we don't know how it's going to play out. This is the biggest economy the world has ever seen. We have our own printing press. So there are ways you could deal with it. But, you know, you don't want inflation to break out because of that. So there isn't much the Fed can really do. They don't have a context for it because we haven't had the problem. They just think at some point it's unsustainable. Where that point is, we don't know.
That's why I could kind of bring it up. I feel like we used to talk about it and then it went away. Final thoughts here, Michael? Just got about 10, 15 seconds.
I would think that Powell speaking next week probably is more important than tomorrow's data. And then I think the jobs number next week, if we still see a strong labor market that's not softening, I think the market could probably well take out rate cuts for this year then.
Interesting.
Throw
times.
In refunding on Wednesday.
And then you got the refunding. But again, the tax receipts are good.
Hey.
It's a trader's market.
Our own Michael McKee and Michael McKenzie. Great duo.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
You drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 18, 19 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up the Thursday trade. Bouncing around here, but we're definitely, as we keep saying, off our worst levels of the session. Down across the board, but nonetheless, not as much of a risk-off or negative tone as much as we saw earlier in the session.
Well, let's hear what Melissa Otto has to say about this. She's head of TMT Research at the fintech firm Visible Alpha. It provides buy and sell side research. She joins us here in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. I want to talk tech because that's like your wheelhouse and it's a perfect day to have you on.
We really care about it right now.
In the wake, I mean, first of all, everything's tech now, but you know, the big tech players are the ones that are reporting earnings this week and next. So we had Meta Platforms yesterday. We have Alphabet and Microsoft after the bell today. First up, is Meta Platforms, is this a sell-off, oversold, is this like overdone?
First of all, thanks for having me on. And what a wild day in the markets to be here speaking
wild.
With you about tech. The backdrop is a jungle at the moment. I mean, there's so much happening both from an earnings perspective and from a macro perspective. I think to address your question around Meta, coming into the quarter based on Visible Alpha consensus over the past couple of months, we didn't see numbers moving that much into the quarter, which suggested that consensus was fairly stable. So when they came out and said, we're actually going to move our expense numbers, those expense numbers were actually higher than expectations, which...
The upper range, right? Certainly.
The upper range. The market did not like that. And it wasn't a one-off because Mark Zuckerberg came out and said, this is something longer term. We're going to be investing for a while. It's going to continue. And I think what we also heard from him was about Reality Labs. Reality Labs also continuing to see continued losses. And I think that was one area of the business where...
That's not a surprise, though. I mean,
it's this is, not.
But it's it wants to go, but it's kind of cost a lot of money. And it's not like we're walking outside seeing people wearing these headsets around.
The investment community was probably hoping for a bit more efficiency and discipline around that area, but he essentially came out and said, no, that's not happening. And I think those two, the combination of those two things, the market didn't like it.
You know, it's interesting, right? And they certainly learned their lesson, right? prior to the year of efficiency, kind of get that, and then kind of got their act together. A stock was off and running big time last year, and we certainly have seen it move this year. You know, our own Mandeep Singh saying, you know, there's a range there, and so it'll be interesting to see what they say about this quarter and whether or not they bring in that range and say, all right, so maybe it's going to be at the lower end. We got the message kind of thing.
But I think what also Mandeep said that really stuck with me, Carol, was this idea that imagine the company making a $50 billion investment or $50 billion purchase of a company.
Right.
And having nothing to show for it, because right. that's how much money it's going to end up spending in this.
Indeed.
That's a lot of money.
Indeed. It's an incredible amount of money that has not really netted much ROI to shareholders.
So the research that you are doing now around Meta, what are you saying? You know, what are you saying that it's not a buy at this point? Are you saying it's a moment where you maybe you take some off of your holdings in Meta? Like, what is it that you are advising?
The expenses around Meta and its investments in AI are going to be significant based on what the company has said. And what we imagine for our consensus data is that there could be some additional upward revisions to expenses going forward this year and next year. So that's one area of the fundamentals that we're watching very closely.
Okay, I want to shift now to what we have coming later today, Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet. What are you seeing consensus over at Visible Alpha?
It's a very interesting backdrop for both companies right now. And I think when we look at similarly, coming into the quarter, we're not seeing a lot of movement around consensus. And that, you know, suggests from a top line and an EPS perspective that the market kind of has come out and said, okay, this is what we think is priced in. However, when we dig beneath the surface, there's different things happening. For example, for the Azure business, the Intelligent mm-hmm. Cloud operating profit margin has a massive range between either 41% on the bear side or 50% on the bull side, which gives us a consensus operating profit margin based on Visible Alpha consensus of 45%. But that's a pretty significant range in terms of what that business could deliver. And it's an enormous business for Microsoft. Azure revenues based on Visible Alpha consensus could be around $74 billion this year, $94 billion next year. And I think what we haven't seen is that any movement of that. And going into the quarter, I'm wondering what sort of commentary Nadella is going to come out with and what's he going to say about the OpenAI business, about the OpenAI partnership, about Azure AI, how that's ultimately going to start to deliver an ROI and have a real meaningful business impact on these fundamentals.
So the consensus data is saying what, basically? That it's going to be hard for them to live up or what?
There's a lot of debate out there. There's controversy in that range because of the significant range of the operating profit margin for the Intelligent Cloud business. It's not, it means that there could be surprises.
Yeah.
And so that's what's really interesting.
Because what you look for is a tight range, right? Or as
that's
much,
right.
Or, you know, in an ideal thing, it's one number, basically. I mean, I don't know how often that happens. This is your world. How often does that happen?
It does absolutely happen. So when I look at Microsoft's overall revenue, it's in a fairly tight range.
Okay.
But when I go beneath the surface and look at the details, you know, for example, the Intelligent Cloud business, the Azure business, within the Intelligent Cloud business, you know, that's where you see that nuance.
How concerned should investors be about what these two companies tell us today about how much money they're investing and how much they're spending, given what we saw from Meta?
They've both been spending an outrageous amount of money.
But is it going to spook investors the way that Meta Platforms did, or does Meta have that history of 2 years ago saying, hey, we're throwing in the towel on the Facebook product and we're switching totally to the metaverse, so it's sort of a different type of investment?
I mean, it is one area that we have been seeing clear trends in the numbers moving upward, is that CapEx numbers for Microsoft have been steadily increasing over the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. Those estimates continue to creep up and have been really since last year.
I bet.
Which implies that, you know, the CapEx expectations continue to be positive. And I think, you know, that's somewhat correlated to what we hear from players like NVIDIA.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just a metric as people are building out their AI and all the players in it, right? Like a different thinking about CapEx, you need the capital expenditures to do it. But is there a point where it becomes a little bit like, wait a minute, do we really understand? Are we outspending maybe the potential payoff? I guess we're kind of in that no man's land. I'm trying to figure that out right now.
Indeed. Yeah, and I think you also mentioned Alphabet. Alphabet is also another interesting one. Also, the top line in EPS consensus haven't moved much.
Yeah.
But again, going beneath the surface, some really interesting movements also in their cloud business. The Google Cloud operating profit margin based on visible alpha consensus went from 8.7% to 7.3% over
right.
the past couple of months. And that's a pretty big move, 140 basis points
that's
in margin. So it implies that
we got to run. We got to run. Forgive us. Lots of numbers, but lots of things to think about as the earnings come out. Melissa Otto, she's head of TMT research at Visible Alpha. And this is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast.
Available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Listen live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern.
On Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app.
You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/FutureInvestor/radio.